What other things did you learn about the whole process or anything you've been reflecting on?
Well, for me, there's a touching moment. You talk to a gentleman and you feel you want to, under the circumstance, you want to have it lively and you want to have it fun. But there's of course, a lot of hurt underneath. And it's very easily comes up. And I was speaking to a gentleman. I just asked him, I just assume maybe he was in the army or something, but he's not. His family had a business in jewelry, and he was, they deal with a lot of like, I was like, oh, jewelry, that's something fun to talk about. Then I was like, oh, gold and silver and diamonds like that. But then quickly went to his family that's still there. You know, everything, I think everything was, they don't have much now. Everything was taken away and there's a lot of family left. So yesterday was just a combination of like like something fun and exciting and food and also a lot of stories, personal stories that really touch the heart.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, thank you for even going deeper. There's nothing wrong with fun and, talking, but I think you touched on a good point. Like there's some underlying, lots of underlying hurt. And even what you shared there, I saw another lady who was talking off the side to someone else and like she was like crying and they're hugging and, so even though we had fun and that's great, there's a lot of underlying things, beneath the surface. So yes, thank you for bringing that up. What other things did you learn? I'll share one thing and I'll still leave it open, but one thing I was thinking about is I learned before, but I saw it clearly, like that even though like we talk about refugees and we think it's easy, like we want to help, right? There's a natural inclination as Christians or even just people, we want to help, but a lot of our help is related to resources. Like we want to provide something, clothing or furniture or something like that. And that's great. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think one of the greatest needs people have is not so much material needs, but is their relationship needs. Think about their loss of community coming here and their loss of family relationships. And some will say, I think Pastor Alex was saying, like, this is like the first time they could come and be with people in like a party, in a community sense. And I think that's something they have lost and they need. They need friendships. And just the same like they do, we need that, right? We need community, we need friendships, right? And so as much as material things are important, like they don't, tell the whole story. And I think when we talk about relationship and community, like it brings that to another level of commitment, especially for us, right? Like it's easy, relatively easy for us to give money or to.
Arthur, you're muted.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, I hear you fine.
We can do that, but the level of investment in relationships, that takes another level, right? That takes time and energy, right? So that's kind of what we're talking about. Any other things that we learned about the whole process, about yourself, about God, about the refugees?
There's kind of comment, Arthur, I was quite impressed or surprised that there were a lot of the younger people in our church that were talking a lot, probably the teenage type group, were talking a lot to refugees. They really seem to be very interested in talking to them, learning. I guess it's kind of, they'd be coming out of their shell a little bit or coming out not really exposed to this kind of situation with refugees. People have been through a life-threatening situation and their whole world's been turned upside down. So I was quite impressed that the young people really were interested and they were talking to them a lot. It was very, very impressive and very kind of, I think it's really a gift from God. We have these young people and they're so interested in this.
Right. Let's hear from the young people. What did you guys think when you talked to, I forget her name, I think the youngest?
Okay.
What was that process? What was that experience like?
She wasn't like shy or like intimidated by us. Mm-hmm. I kind of felt like they would be more reserved.
Mm-hmm.
But she was pretty outgoing, like going up to everyone and saying like, "What do you want to eat?" Something like that.
Uh-huh. But she was. What did she go around and say?
Washi
Mani. She learned a Chinese phrase.
Yeah, she learned a Chinese phrase. Wow. And started saying, they're like, that's your looks. She has the same thing to me. She's like, Washi Mani. I'm like, what? Why don't you go talk to one of the younger boys over there?
Right. Awesome. So, yeah, that's perfect, Seth, because I think that brings up another issue is that, you know, when we reach unreached peoples, it's not unlimited. Right, I can only really talk to someone my age and my situation, but I can't really reach the younger people, right? I'm not young, but like you guys can, right? And like the women, I can't really talk with them, like, but the women can, all right? And so if you want to reach a family, it takes more than one person. It takes a whole church to reach this, to reach them. Okay. Any other things that we learned?
I think it was, you know, from the youth perspective, you know, they're not all speaking out their, you know, their comments, I'm sure. But like, I think for Bethany, she had a sense of excitement afterwards. She was excited. She said, why don't we do this more? And I also noticed that whether it's young or old, it takes someone with the gifting and the desire sometimes to just set it up. And then people have the environment and other gifts turn on, right? Then I saw a lot of the conversations happen. I saw a lot of engagement, like Scott was saying, even the young people. You see the young people engaged. And then you see even like Ryan, like Peter and Nancy said, able to teach skateboard to Ramin, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't think he would have expected I could do anything because like teenage boys are not going to be like, hi, how are you? Mm-hmm. Like, how have you been in America? Mm-hmm. Right. But like, oh, like I know how to skateboard. I'll share the skateboard and build a relationship a little bit that way. Mm-hmm. And they enjoyed it. So to me, I think when I think about the whole event, it takes someone with, you know, time and a burden sometimes, or sees the need. I don't know if you have the bandwidth to do all of it, right? But it takes maybe the type of people who can logistically set things up. And then when people come, because not everybody has that gift to say, I can pull something like this all together. But when everybody comes, then there's opportunities for different spiritual gifts to turn on. Like Lily, then she's using her phone, Google Translate conversations. There's people who may not talk as much as comfortably, but they want to cook and food. So I think all the gifts kind of the church are kind of in play. Mm-hmm. And that's really neat. I think that's what God desires. And again, then I was really surprised at Bethany's reaction because she's like, this was so great. She was so excited, right? Were you?
Yeah.
I'm speaking for you, right? And then she was like, why don't, you know, like, can we do more of these? Because that's the first time we get to experience. I saw Frank talking with, it's Frank on the line, but Frank was talking to Hamin, you know, who I talked to in the beginning, a very willing conversationalist, right? He has a wife and two children. And then I saw Frank talking with him all throughout the rest of the day, like one-on-one. And I was just wondering if there was a gospel opportunity there or just getting to know him. Frank is very good at caring and making someone feel cared for. That's another great example. Frank wouldn't have set a day like this up, but when it was set up, he just wanted to come, and then his gifting goes in, kicks into gear, you know? So I think, like, I don't know, it's neat from that perspective. It's, you know, it was a really powerful witness of what we can do as a church.
Lily, how did the Google Translate work?
Sorry, are you asking me?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, it's Google Translate. Yeah, it's not perfect. Sometimes, like, when we're translating stuff, it doesn't make sense. So you got to guess, you know, you kind of got to guess, like, what are they trying to say? But as long, like, I think it's okay for very, very basic, simple conversation. But then when you get into, like, how are you feeling? What do you need? Like, that kind of thing becomes very complicated.
Right.
And frankly, I don't really understand what the lady was trying to tell me. So maybe you guys know, because she was telling me that it was very hard for her. It's very challenging to do grocery to go shopping. And then I asked her, do you need a ride? Like, do you need someone to take you there? And then I think she said that she has a car. Is that right, Jacqueline? Like, or anybody, do they have cars?
Most of them don't. Maybe.
But there are some that do?
I'm not sure about that. Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, that's another issue, right? So you can see that as missionaries go, they can't have a superficial understanding of the language, right? To get to that deeper level, yeah, Google Translate can only get you so far, right? But even a superficial, like, 1 year study of language may not be enough to get to the heart of someone, to be able to communicate with someone at that level. So, yeah. Anything else that people want to share?
Can I share the pictures I took?
Yes.
Okay.
How do I allow?
I'll try share screen. Host disabled participant.
Am I the host?
Huh?
Okay.
Yeah, Jesse and Jacqueline, you guys are having an animated conversation there, man. What's up, bro?
Can you share now?
I will try. I could share now. Yeah, just a minute.
You know what? There's another thing, Arthur, that I observed. I was thinking about yesterday. Sometimes people think about. I know. I think even in some of the emails, right, talking about relationships, and this is like one, like our first endeavor. And then we have a lot of, I don't know if it's, what is it called? Is it not critical thoughts, but I think a lot of questions, right? Like, should we do it one time? You know, is this going to do anything? Is it going to leave, you know? And I have those too. I think I tend to go there first. I don't tend to think of as many questions. I'm more of a, like, just go for it anyways. So I liked it that we just went for it. And when Bex and I were talking and they talked to the ladies and talking to Abdul, this was the first time, like I shared with you, like, they got out for a large gathering. They felt it was like a party for them. Mm-hmm. And I think they felt that there's a group of people who are Christians who just wanted to host a party for them. Nothing was pushed on them. We didn't, like, make them sit through a 20-minute gospel presentation. But how many Muslims in this area has done this yet for them? This was their first. And it was a group of Christians who loved them and just wanted to meet a felt need and begin something, right? And so I thought that was really powerful to think about, like, we are the first to host them and welcome them. And not even their own people of their own religion have done that yet, you know? So I just felt really, like, proud that we as a, you know, group, like, came together for them.
Awesome.
Oh, those boys are cute.
You're so cute. Yeah.
Good to have the background.
Pretty hair. So I didn't get everybody. I didn't want to take too many pictures of the women because they might be sensitive to that, but I just took group pictures. I took some great pictures of Pastor Alex and the team. Ryan was great.
That meet was supposed to be for other tables, but that group, like, took it all.
Yes.
Gave it to us.
Jacqueline and her mom.
Okay.
Our youth. Lily, Elise.
Those are nice.
Yeah.
We should, like, get them on rotation for Sunday morning, like, before or after church starts.
Can I input something too?
Yeah.
This barbecue really gave us the opportunity to bring Jacqueline's mom to church too, because Jacqueline's mom won't come to church for, like, Sunday school or whatever. But because of the barbecue, you know, Jacqueline's mom came too, and she's not a believer, and this is the first time that she's been wanting to come to the church. So that was a beautiful thing too.
Oh, she got connected with Katie.
Yeah.
They're both from Taiwan. They connected.
Yeah, I told them. Go talk to my mother-in-law. She's not a believer. Just please go and sit by her and talk to her. And he's like, okay, I'll go do it right now.
Oh, great.
Should check a little bit. Who's out? Just so we don't have, you know, we're talking about some sensitive fans.
Any other thoughts?
Okay, I have just one question.
Yes.
The group that we connected with, that Jacqueline volunteers with, do we have any more information about them on what they're really, are they a Christian-based organization, or are they just a group of people that are working with the refugees? Is there more information we have on them?
Yes, this is the group that was working with a refugee center. So Anne and Tom, I don't know if you met them. They're the directors, or Anne specifically is the director for the Newcomers Access Center. And they get placements of refugees, and they help them, like, find a place, do all, there's a lot of things, as you might expect, for them to come to this country and help with everything. Food stamps, Medi-Cal, you know, schools for the kids, learning English, setting up furniture. There's so many different things, right? So that organization. So Tom and Anne were there. Chris, another lady that was there, she was also a volunteer. I don't know if they're Christian or not. I don't think so. I don't know if Jacqueline knows.
The group I saw was not a Christian group, but I know there's a lot of local churches that helps them out.
Okay.
Also, I don't know if you heard, but Anne's gonna be sending out a list of stuff that they need for the next group that's gonna come in, the next group of Afghans that are gonna need a place to stay. Okay. So they're gonna rotate these folks out, and they're gonna have another whole family or families that are gonna come live in pretty much at that center. And we asked if they would give us a list that we could maybe disperse to the church to see if we can, as a body, maybe help set up another one of the apartments.
Right. So yes, I hope this continues in different ways. It doesn't always have to be a big event like this, but in big and small ways that it can continue. So we're gonna move on today. So that was welcome. And so we spent a lot of time in welcome. We're gonna talk about the last way of the six ways, which is mobilize. Okay. So what does that even mean?
By the way, I was looking for something that I was gonna share with you first, Arthur, and I can still send it out to you guys. I've been communicating with missionaries that we support in our church, and they have in the past been to they were in northeastern China reaching the Uyghurs, right? And so, but they've been kicked out of China, and so now they're doing a lot of other things. When I shared with them about our outreach to the Afghan refugees yesterday, they said, "We are so excited to hear about the Afghan refugee ministry in your church. Certainly God is doing amazing things among Afghan refugees these days. We were in their bi-weekly prayer with this Chinese missionary couple who are serving Afghan Hazara refugees in Pakistan this morning. And we were so amazed by the work of God in such a short time." So God is working the gospel work within Afghan refugees. And they said Chinese churches and Christian organizations and believers responded to the needs there quickly and generously, right? And so the couple, along with some local partners, are able to serve over 50 families of Afghan refugees and have led many of these Afghans to the Lord Jesus and have started discipleship training courses with them and also started a church in Pakistan that meets with them every Sunday. So they were excited to hear that. And we may think, they have a cultural belief, they have a religion, but in this instance, they're sharing how Afghan refugees are turning to Christ. Yeah, so I think it's, you know, just something put out there, and that's straight from the missionary field.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Great, thank you for sharing that. So the question I have for us today is, can we accomplish the task of reaching God's world? Okay, and how do we do that? So can we accomplish thinking about the 1040 window, thinking that there's like 3 billion people who are never heard of the gospel, never heard of the name Jesus. How can we do this? How can we accomplish this task? Okay, and I want to put forth two ideas that we'll explore this morning. This can be done through mobilization and multiplication. And I'll tell you what those mean and how it practically plays out, okay? So first of all, what is mobilization? Okay, so I'll give you an example. So I'll use this example again. Again, it's a war example. I don't necessarily like war for that, but it is what it is. Okay, so in World War II, they say about 10% of US population went to war. They actually moved, okay, or like directly involved in the war effort, okay? About 1% of the US population actually fought on the front lines, okay? That means even like 90% of the country was at home, was here, but the country was mobilized into the war effort, meaning factories had to be converted, people worked, people saved like metal, like households, like recycle them so they could use that for, you know, military purposes. Like the whole country was mobilized for that purpose. Okay, so how does this relate to missions? Okay, so what is the definition of a mobilizer in terms of missions? Okay, and so can someone read that for us? This is a mobilizer. This is I don't know the author, but someone want to read that for us?
I could read.
Sure.
Okay. fired with a desire to see others trained, prepared, and released to ministry. The mobilizer sounds the rally call by stirring other Christians to active concern for reaching the world. Mobilizer coordinate efforts between senders, the local churches, sending agencies, and the missionaries on the field. They teach believers to pray missionarily. They recruit students to prospective classes. Mobilizer put good mission literature in the hands of others. Mobilizer are excited, motivated, gracious, mission aware, and radical. Mobilizer are essential.
So this kind of describes what this last way, the mobilization, the mobilizer, what a mobilizer does, okay? And it can be argued that actually all of us can be mobilizers, okay? And so you may think, have this idea of what a mobilizer is, and you said, oh, I can't do that, right? But mobilization could be simply just, you know, we'll go into different specific things that you can do, but it's like inviting a friend to a missions conference, like lending someone a book, you know, like sharing something just in casual conversation about something you learned in missions, right? Or even sharing, like this week, you know, you go to work or school, like people ask you, oh, what did you do this weekend? Oh, we did this, our church did this. And, you know, some people are like, oh, that's cool. And some people may just like, they may want to ask you more. Okay, so that is actually mobilization, because you are sharing, you're like bringing awareness to others. You know, for those who are even more interested, you tell them a little more as you're learning yourself, right? So that's what a mobilizer does. And I'll tell you that mobilization, I think personally, I've been mobilizing for about 7-8 years. Like, outside of going, because I haven't gone, at least long term, like it is probably one of the hardest things to do, probably the hardest of the six besides go, because everything else, if you think about it, pray, learn, you know, send, welcome, it's something that we can control in ourselves. Like we can do it. Like I can pick up a book and read, or I can sit down and pray. Mobilizing, to actually mobilize someone, it's like, it's not only dependent on me, right? Someone has to respond, right, to that. And I can't control that, right? And so sometimes there's frustrations, but there's sometimes great joy in doing that, okay? So mobilization. Okay, I wanna look at this verse. We talked about this verse maybe a couple months ago, let me read that to you, because this ties into mobilization, okay? 2 Timothy 2:2, and the things you have heard me say. Okay, so this is Paul the apostle writing to Timothy, right? Timothy is his, Paul's disciple in Timothy, okay? And the things you have heard me say in the presence of many witnesses, entrust to reliable people who will also be qualified to teach others. Okay, so do you guys remember how many generations does this one verse encompass? Like how many levels of people are there? I think we talked about it last time, but briefly. How many levels do you see? Four, yes, I heard four, and that's correct. Okay, four. In the sense that the things you have heard me, right? So that's Paul, okay? And things that you have heard, so Timothy, right? Entrust to reliable people, so people under Timothy, who will also be qualified to teach others, okay? Four generations, okay? And so this is a graph or like a representation of that. Paul is here, right? Timothy, who he discipled, he said, here it says faithful men, some translation says faithful, but reliable people, faithful men. Okay, he's to entrust to reliable people who actually qualify to teach others, right? Four generations of that, okay? And you can see by this is how mobilization or discipleship is tied to the idea of multiplication. Okay, you can see the numbers exponentially like grow like this, okay? And I'll just go, this is a kind of a different graph, it's the same idea, right? Start with one, three, and those each of those three disciple three, and then it grows like that, okay? So let me do a math question for you guys, okay? So if you were to disciple three people for 2 years, okay? You just did nothing but disciple three people for 2 years, okay? And those students of yours, each after those 2 years, discipled three people on their own for two more years, okay, and so forth, repeated. And let's say over the course of your lifetime, okay, but let's just say you did it once, okay, you did 2 years, invested in three people, they did it two more years, okay, and you repeated this before, how many people would you have discipled? Anyone want to guess? Who's good with math here? You can pull out a calculator if you want, but just a rough guess. What do you think? Anyone? Just ballpark guess.
About 30?
Huh? How many people?
Hundreds.
Millions. Okay. Anyone higher than millions? Hundreds of millions. Oh, that's bold. Okay. The answer is 5.2 billion people. Okay. Okay. So just for your math nerds, I made the calculations, but if you just go like 3 to the 20th power, because there's like 20 generations, that in itself is like like 2 or 3 billion, but you also have to count 3 to the, you know, 19, 3 to the 18, add all those up. If you add all that up, so more than the people almost in the world, right? Like more than the non-Christians in this world.
Can you tutor my children?
Okay. So, but let me ask you this, okay? If this were true, okay, why isn't it happening? Why, you know, we could have reached the world way over and over again. Why does this model, in one sense, not work? Where does it break down? And just your thoughts, like, why would this not work? Or not would it not work, but why has it worked in real life? What do you guys think?
Too many roadblocks.
Okay. In terms of what? Like
Satan's influence or other religions that are, you know, worship idols and thing, idolatry, and a lot of interferences, maybe from Satan and from deeply ingrained idolatry.
Okay. What other things?
Well, I'm thinking of two reasons. One is people don't, like, not discipling people.
Okay.
But some people maybe do more than 2, 3, but some people don't do it at all.
Okay.
The other reason is just, I think, the number of Christians in an area just gets saturated, and you have people to disciple.
So Daniel's bringing up a few points, but one is like, do we even disciple? Do we even do that first step from 1 to 3 people? Okay, that's a question, right? And it could be up to the point where, let's say, everyone's discipling, but we reach a saturation point, right? Okay. What are the thoughts? I don't quite have an answer, but I'll say that I think, okay, let's say that we actually do disciple, okay, because there are people that we care for and we like talk to and we want to mentor, but I think what happens is that we don't do the next step. We don't actually, the people we mentor, we don't actually encourage them to mentor. We don't take it forward. Okay. We just kind of, we want to pour into them, those three people. But are we making sure, are we encouraging them, those three people, to pour into another three people each? Okay. We don't take that next step, that next level. Okay. And so it ends like this. Okay. So here's another picture that kind of illustrates this. You can have one leader mentoring, let's say, five people. Okay. But you can see that, you know, the sweat coming out of that person. There's like a lot to put into five different people, right? And like, if that's all it is, and that just kind of remains there. But what if that person were to encourage those five people or three people or whatever to interact with other, to mentor other people, disciple other people? Well, then you get what's a network. Right, you get interactions, it's more dynamic, and it facilitates multiplication, right? And the people on the side here, you may have from a church a few people who actually are spiritually strong, that they may actually go on to start another church, okay? And so they may form the nucleus of a daughter church, okay? And so this idea of multiplication, if you replace these people, okay, imagine these people, but imagine churches doing the same thing. So the idea is, okay, the hub strategy is a mother church, and they kind of disciple other churches, evangelism, okay, but it says actually this is a bad strategy, okay, because it assumes that the mother church has reproductive, that only the mother church has reproductive power. It wears out the workers and fails to multiply. Okay. If you as the mother church or you as an individual are the only one pouring into that, you get tired, right? You're sending out, but the people that you're pouring into, either individuals or churches, if they're not doing that, then it doesn't go anywhere. Okay. So a better way is the same idea, a network, right? A mother church does invest in other churches, but maybe a few churches, but you invest so that they want to reproduce, okay? So they reproduce grandmother church, you know, other daughter churches, granddaughter churches, okay? And this is how multiplication happens, okay? So, but let me ask you, okay, this sounds good in theory, like this has happened in real life. Have we seen this happen? Okay, and so let me share this. I do want to take this time to read this article. Okay, it's called Church Planting Movements. And can I just have, a few people take, we're gonna read like two pages of this because I think it's encouraging, starting from at the top, look at the nations. If you can read like a couple paragraphs, and just whoever just wants to start. Maybe we just go down the line. Christina?
Look to the nations, watch and be utterly amazed, for I am going to do something in your days that you would not believe even if you were told. Habakkuk 1:5.
Several years ago, this verse came to life in ways I never dreamed possible. It was the time of the year when missionaries send in their annual reports to agency headquarters. Missionaries are busy people and rarely enthusiastic about stopping long. I can't read that. Okay. About stopping long enough to tell how many new believers were baptized, how many new churches were started, or how many unreached people groups they had introduced to the gospel. Each year, these reports typically show modest growth in each of these key areas.
But this year was different. David and Jane Watson serving in India made an incredible claim. Their report listed nearly 100 cities, towns, and villages with new churches and thousands of new believers.
Headquarters was skeptical. This can't be, he said. Either you misunderstood the question or you're not telling us the truth. The word stopped, but David held his tongue. Come and see, he said.
Do you want to?
Well,
you don't have to.
Okay, I'll do it. Later that year, a survey team headed by Watson's supervisor arrived in India to investigate. They visited Lucknow, Patna, Delhi, Varanasi, and numerous towns and villages listed in Davis report. The supervisor later commented, "I went in very doubtful, but we were wrong. Everywhere we went, it was exactly as Watson had it reported. God was doing something amazing there."
Amazing. Difficult to believe. Those are the words, the very words of Habakkuk. It took on a surprising new relevance. Look to the nations, watch, and be utterly amazed. For I'm going to do something in your days that you would not believe, even if you were told.
Cindy? No. Oh, okay.
Bethany, why don't you
read the last? A year later, another report from Southeast Asia described a similar eruption. Following year, missionary survey in Latin America witnessed the same sort of spontaneous multiplication of hundreds of new churches. Two more similar reports came in from China. We began to refer to these amazing phenomena as church planting movements.
Sure. The reports haven't stopped coming. As he promised, God is doing something extraordinary in our day. As he draws a lost world to himself, church planting movements appear to be a large part of how he's doing it.
Someone online.
In East Asia, a missionary reported, "I launched my three-year plan in November 2000. My vision was to see 200 new churches started among my people group over the next 3 years. But 4 months later, we had already reached that goal. After only 6 months, we had already seen 360 churches planted and more than 10,000 new believers baptized. Now I'm asking God to enlarge my vision." Chinese Christians in Qing'an County of Heilongjiang Province planted 236 new churches in a single month. In 2002, one church planting movement in China brought about 15,000 new churches and baptized 160,000 new believers in a single year.
During the decade of During the decade of the 1990s, Christians in the Latin American country overcame relentless government persecution to grow from 235 churches to more than 4,000 churches, with more than 30,000 converts awaiting baptism.
A pastor in Western Europe wrote, "Last year, my wife and I started 15 new house churches. As we left for a six-month stay side assignment, we wondered what we'd finally returned. It's wild. We can verify at least 30 churches now, but I believe that it could be two or even three times that many.
After centuries of hostility to Christianity, many Central Asian Muslims are now embracing the gospel. In Kazakhstan, the past decade has seen more than 13,000 Kazakhs come to faith.
Kazakhs
come to faith, worshiping in more than 300 new Catholic churches."
A missionary in Africa reported, "It took us 30 years to plant 4 churches in this country. We started 65 new churches in the last 9 months. In the heart of India, in the state Madhya Pradesh, one church planting movement produced 4,000 new churches in less than 7 years. Elsewhere in India, the Queen people of Orissa started nearly 1,000 new churches during the 1990s. In 1999, they baptized more than 8,000 new believers. By 2001, they were starting a new church every 24 hours.
With the last part in it. Out of Mongolia, a church planting movement saw more than 10,000 new followers. Another movement in Inner Mongolia counted more than 50,000 new believers, all during the decade of the 1990s. Over the past two decades, many millions of new believers have entered Christ's kingdom through church planting movements. We've seen them in every part of the world. Okay. Sorry, did I not share this online with people? Oh, no, I did. I don't know why. Okay. Share one more. Okay. Back to this. Okay. So it does happen, right? So what are some principles of church planting movements? Okay. So this, for the sake of, I do want to ask you, like, what going back to this, how can you think of some ways that people do this rather than this? Like, what are some things that churches can do to multiply rapidly? Any thoughts, any just general things? Even if it's not churches, like individuals. Like I showed you the picture of the multiple network of interactions. Like what can churches do? What can people do? Or maybe what should we not do in the church? Any thoughts?
I think motivation is it's a start.
Okay.
And we need to motivate each other.
Uh-huh.
It's like monitoring, and we need to bounce one another instead of just sitting there and not doing anything.
Right. Great. So Maple said we need to encourage and what was the word you used?
Motivate
people around us, right? And it's not just the job of a pastor, right? It's not one person's job. It's all of our jobs to motivate. Yeah.
Go ahead.
From the article, to be prepared, because there are years that you only have planted four churches, but you would also have time in a short time you be planting a few hundred churches. So in those lean years, be prepared for the growth to come.
Okay, good. What other thoughts?
You open to controversial
thoughts? Sure. You always bring the controversy, Frank.
Should I?
Go ahead.
I think, I've heard, and I've read that one way to do the multiplication is less barrier of entry into that discipleship or leading.
Okay.
Right. So less control,
right.
More movements,
right.
And looser grip.
Okay.
In order to push people out.
Right. Okay. Great. Right. So that's one of the principles, right? Like Frank was saying, decrease the barriers to starting another church. Right, which means a little bit less control, a little looser kind of network. So sometimes we wait too long, is that we got to make sure this church is perfect before we can reproduce something else. Well, if you do that, you will never reproduce because no church is perfect. Right.
But that goes to everything. That goes for every ministry. That goes for, you know, it's a leadership mentality.
Mm-hmm.
I think what you said earlier is that, you know, you're intentional when you're working with others, especially younger believers, that there's a mission to move out.
Mm-hmm.
There's a mission to be outward or to lead others, right? And so when you're spending time building others up and you make sure that that's one of the end goals,
mm-hmm.
right? Which is not to be so much insular, but to, hey, like, remember the things that I'm sharing with you because you're going to be sharing this with others,
mm-hmm.
right? So there's already kind of like a mindset in place to multiply, right? The phrase is not even used, let's say, at our church very often.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's a mindset of saying multiply is a key, right? And that prevents people from being insular. That's why Mabel used a word, let's not be a church who's not reaching out to others, right? When we use the word call to action and be active, the wrong mentality is let's be more active here, right? But to be active in a movement that can bring us out, right? The more we think about here, the less we're able to be out. Mm-hmm. And every person and every church that you plant will have the mindset to say, we're going to keep going out. Mm-hmm. That actually brings a lot of health to the church, right? Because you're not insular. You're, you know, all throughout scripture, you see the call to God's people to be outward, not inward. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a, you know, that's a miss when we take the scripture as like, you know, to be inward.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Any other thoughts?
I think we have to be constantly being reminded that what's the purpose of our life? Mm-hmm. Is our purpose of life being changing the American dreams and I need to have a good career and all that. So mm-hmm. I think we need to be reminded the what's the greatest mission for God that's telling us that the purpose why we're still here is that we just bloom when mm-hmm. we're up in heaven.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. So maybe what we're saying for those online is that we have to be constantly reminded of what is our purpose, right? Like, is our purpose to chase after the American dream, you know, or is it God's mission? Like we often lose that focus. Good. Okay. So I'm gonna skip over these principles. We'll talk about it next week, okay? But I wanna end on this, okay? Because I want us to see that there is the idea of multiplication in the Bible, okay? And oftentimes Jesus, this is a familiar passage to you all, is like, talks about harvest or things of planting nature, okay? And I'll read this verse, Matthew 13, verse 8. And then 23 is the explanation. Still, other seed fell on good soil or produced a crop 100, 60, or 30 times what was sown. Okay? And the interpretation is that the seed falling on good soil refers to someone who hears the word, understands it. This is the one who produces a crop yielding 100, 60, or 30 times what was sown. Okay, so there's this idea of multiplication from one seed that can produce way more than is expected, okay? And so the principle behind this is oftentimes we think like the main thing we're talking about is the fruit, okay? And so, but I'll say this, okay? The fruit is not the most important product of a tree, okay? Can anyone guess what the most important product of the tree is? It's actually the seed in the fruit, because the seed in the fruit is planted, it sprouts another tree, and that tree produces fruit, which produces other seeds that is multiplied there, right? And so actually, if you think about the fruit, yeah, to us, it's good, right? It's like we can eat it, okay? But the fruit actually is encasing the more precious seed, which allows that tree to reproduce over and over and over again. Okay, so that's the idea of multiplication. Okay, and so we have to think in terms of that more than just what's in front of us. Okay, whether that's churches or whether that's individuals. And I think Mabel's point was good too, in the sense that we often just think, okay, the person in front of us. Okay, but what is the main purpose for that person? Okay, it is to spread God's glory amongst the world, right? And for them, for the person that they are discipling, for that person beyond that, right? So we have to think the greater purpose of that. Okay. So we'll touch base on the other things, the church planting movement characteristics and principles next week. So next week is our final class for this mission series. So we'll wrap up, but also wrap up this section, but we'll also kind of have some time for reflection too. Okay. So you'll be happy, no homework this week. You know, our homework was yesterday, we did all that, that was a good time for everyone. Okay. So let me pray for us. Dear Jesus, I just thank you for this time, Lord. And I thank you that you have shown us in your word and through reports of missionaries that your work just goes untamed and uncontrolled, and it spreads like wildfire, Lori. But we may experience periods of drought, of no movement, Lord, but when it is the right time, Lord, when we have a focus on you, Lord, and what you want us to do individually and as a church, Lord, that you would multiply the little things that we do have, Lord. It doesn't take much, Lord, but you take what little faith we have, Lord, and you multiply that, and you said that can move mountains, Lord. And so we thank you. We thank you that you work through us and in us, Lord, and you do amazing things, Lord, and we want to see that, Lord, and we ask of you, Lord, because we know it only can come from you, Lord. Lord, your power, your work, Lord, but that work comes through us, Lord, that it works in us and then through us to reach your world, whether it's Afghan refugees here, international students, friends, family, across the world, that you would use us and allow us to participate in your mission, Lord. So we thank you for this time. We pray all these things.
Amen.